Log Talk Radio.
History. On this day, 12009, I've seen many roots grow tall like vines. For on this day, history has been made. For all pain and struggle should be buried in the grave. History is today, to have seen it in such a beautiful way. Millions of people stand around, to a man with powerful word of sound. At the top of the land, to have a king, I pledge to say, I have a dream. History, a great inspiration that builds up the nation throughout generations. As a black man to stand proud and free, that steadily keeps building up his family tree. A black president, we ask, how could this be? It's the faith in God that dwells on thee. From a small place to a big valley, his shall come in such a great rally. From a small river to a big ocean, his shall flow with such a great motion. History is today, no matter circumstance or situation. History is here to stay, a bad man in a bad situation. Success is screened for our nation. Barack Obama, an achieving man, our 44th president, yes we can.
WCC Digital Online Radio. I'm your host, Karima. Thank you for tuning in to the show today. We're talking about Common Sense Construction Law by Smith, Curry, and Hancock. This is about a platform about a duty of good faith and fair dealings. It is an implied covenant, interpreting the contract and implied contract obligations, duty to cooperate. So we'll be jumping into this a little bit more down the line here. We're going to finish playing Ooh Wee by Ayana, wishing her a happy birthday. This is NCWCC Digital Online Radio. Thank you all for tuning in this afternoon. So we'll get into that in just a second. Good afternoon and welcome back to the NCWCC Digital Broadcast Network. Played a couple songs that are instrumental to me, History by Darnell Jones, and of course Candlelight, which is our opening, which is by Mario Coleman. He's an independent artist. And of course, Ayana, we want to wish her a happy birthday. She was a platinum artist and located here in Atlanta once upon a time. Now she's out in California. Actually, she's in London right now. But today's discussion and the platform for us is based on some interesting things that are taking place in my life right now and lives of other women, companies, and all business owners that I know of. Smith, Curry, and Hancock is a large construction law firm located here in Atlanta, Georgia, and they published the fourth edition called Common Sense Construction Law, a practical guide for construction professionals. It was edited by Thomas Keller Jr. and Scott Walters. The firm itself has Library of Congress cataloging publications data. The information is made available. We got this information from one of the lawyers who worked for Smith Curry and Hancock. And this is very important for us as we start this series that's coming up, that we're going to continue to podcast about what is implied and what isn't. The firm's concentrating is practice on the construction industry. For more than four decades, Smith Curry and Hancock LLP with offices in Atlanta, Georgia, Charlotte, North Carolina, Fort Lauderdale, Tallahassee, Florida, Las Vegas, Nevada, and Washington, D.C., has developed a nationally recognized practice focused on the construction industry, and they have a variety of legal issues facing the industry. The federal government construction contract law has been a principal practice area since the firm was founded. The firm represents private and public clients working throughout the 50 states, as well as Mexico, Canada, Central and South America, Europe, and Asia. So as I get into this a little bit more, I just wanted to give accolades to the firm and the general service firm. And this firm was formed in 1965, and they concentrated on their practices in the areas in order to provide more effective services for their clients. And one of the things I wanted to do is discuss interpreting the laws, contracts, in which some of us are getting more into as the industry opens up a little bit more for people who have kind of held on. There is just a couple of important issues as we start to talk about building capacity and creating a podcast training opportunity for people that are in the industry. And our intent right now is to cover just basic black and white law involving contracts. And one of the sensitive things that has taken place for us is when we talked about implied contractual obligations. Well, this includes, and this is from this particular book on page 108, it's an opportunity to talk about implied contracting obligations, and you can find this and call Smith, Curry, and Hancock. The law includes implied obligations in every contract. In addition to the obligations that are expressly agreed on by the parties, that is what it is noted here. So implied obligations can allocate risk and responsibility between contracting parties with the same force as terms that are negotiated and reduced to writing in a signed agreement. Three of the most important applied obligations arising in construction contracts are briefly discussed in these three sections. Now, what I want to do is jump back into where we know where the courts review existing prior dealings. When the courts frequently interpretate a contract based on facts and circumstances surrounding the contract's information. And this is what courts often say. Their evidence comes in three forms. The first evidence is of evidence of discussion and conduct. The second evidence of parties of prior dealings, and that's very important. And then the third evidence of custom and usage in the industry. Now, what I want to focus on is, and I hope you all don't go to sleep about this, because sometimes a lot of people will get you out on a project, ladies, and won't do a change order. Or you've been working with somebody for a while, and all of a sudden they get brain dead, and they forget that you either was instrumental in getting a contract, and then they try to do some kind of drastic things, and we'll talk about that a little bit later. But the parties' prior dealings, they say if If parties have dealt with each other previously, courts may look at that as an earlier behavior in practice and help interpretate the current contract, although evidence of the established pattern of prior dealings may be offered to aid a court, it cannot be used to a variable modify the clear express terms of a written contract. Now, the prior evidence for rules that have these particular dealings, in other words, if you have a relationship already had been built internally with this company for some time, a lot of times the courts will look at the fact that there are some general admissions to show intent or how clearly a contract is pre-stated. And prior to this course, you may show that the contract may not have been a final or complete agreement of the parties, but the prior conduct may also amount to a waiver, or a party may be enforcing an explicit contract requirement in order to prior diligence. What that means in layman's term is, let's say, for example, I bid in a project, won $7 or $8 million worth of work from a contractor who had been implied that anything that we awarded, then you can work on these projects so that you can build your company. Now, if you can show at that particular time that over the years there's been a pattern of coming in and bidding projects on their behalf, and then you can also prove that in the fact that those individuals have won on those projects in the past, and that the relationships have been built, but an incident comes up where, you know, the individual says, I don't have a direct contract that states that I'm supposed to pay this individual for doing this type of work. Well, that person is negligent, or the negligence falls on that individual who has interpreted and implied that there is a working relationship involved. And one of the things that we are going to focus on is on good faith duties, duty of good faith and fair dealings, and that is the most important thing. That is something that the state of Georgia and a lot of contractors really started working just really ruthlessly without any kind of general duty of good faith and fair dealings. When the industry was booming, ladies and gentlemen, people were getting people to build houses and knew they couldn't pay for the project and then move in and still owe the contractor for the work. And they've been doing this for years, but this was really prevalent. It was almost like being in the Wild Wild West in 2006-07. And then when 2008 came, the big boom came, the burst came in 2009, then we started to understand that this is what this is not just implied, but this is something that the UCC, the Uniform Commercial Code, defines as good faith, as honesty. In fact, in the conduct of or transactioning concerns or the observance of reasonable commercial standards of fair dealing in the trade. So basically, if a person tells you that they sign a contract, it means nothing to them, that's a deadly individual. You want to leave that person alone. But even if there is no contract and you see that they have no interest in dealing with good faith, honest practices, then that's another contractor, an individual that works as a prime contractor that you want not to mess with. So we want to talk about the duties of a good faith and fair dealings has been explained, and it's been explained as simply this: it's an implied covenant. And a covenant that imposes obligations on both contracting parties that are included in the duty to interfere with the other party's performance, not to an act as to destroy the reasonable expectation of the other party of the fruits of the contract. In layman's terms, what that really means is that, and I can say this because I understand this completely, being a professional in the construction industry for 23 years, it is my experience that any covenant, any agreement, back in the day, you walk on a job site, you shake a man's hand, unfortunately, you can say man, and you can look that guy in the eye, and he says, if you pour this for me, I'm going to give you $40,000. I mean, I'm going to give you $10,000 now. I'm going to pay for your concrete. If we like the work, then we'll pay you the balance. And here's a little purchase order. You send it on to our office, and we'll go ahead and get started today or tomorrow. And that was good enough, you know. And so that was a good, safe, good dealing, honest conduct of transactions between the concerned parties. And without that regard, any contract, a contract is only good than the person that has the ink pen in their hand, you know. And if you cannot expressly understand that there's a virtual covenant that is implied in our industry, then you shouldn't be in our industry, because there was a part that people cared about each other and that a covenant was law. It was something that you want to talk about even in the old days, where a man or woman gave you his word, because that's what a contract really is. The contract is implied that there's a duty to cooperate. That is implied in every contract, wherever one's party cooperation is necessary. So if a contractor's perspective is based on the owner's implied duty to cooperate, it is most important that most of these contract obligations are met based on the old laws, that there will be no damages caused by me implying that I will cooperate to ensure that you get to be able to perform for the duties in which I need you to do. Now, you can go into a whole bunch of other things where it's difficult sometimes to determine whether or not covenants have been broken or not, but it's very simple. As I said before, back in the day, the individuals had an opportunity to basically get on a contract and give a man his hand and allow him to perform work for him based on his virtue. And so we don't have that anymore in a lot of places in construction. And we want to kind of take a second here to kind of go through that for just a minute. Welcome back to the NCWCC Digital Online. I got our first caller on. I got contracting a professional on the line. I want to bring in a young lady that I've been knowing for some time now. Tony, welcome to the call.
Thank you, Karima. How are you doing today?
Well, you know how it is. Every day is an interesting day to be in this business. Hey, why don't you tell everybody a little bit about your company and what you do and all of that. And let's talk about what I've been implying about with the construction laws, implying good faith dealing. So let everybody know your name and where you're from and your background.
Okay, my name is Tony McCurry, and I'm from Cleveland, Georgia. And my business is called Complete Diversified Services Incorporated. And basically, I have a demolition company. We do structural demolition. We do retail interior demolition in the malls. And basically, we go in and either tear a structure down or we gut it out and get it ready for another store to come on board. I've been in business for about 7 years, and it's very tough in the industry, just like you're saying, especially being a woman-owned company. A lot of times the problems that we face is with the men that don't think we know what we're doing, or they don't give us the benefit of the doubt that we can do a job just as good as they can. And with that being said, I'm sure everybody that's been in this industry has experienced that at least a time or two. I've actually even had my contracts pulled out from under me and actually handed to male contractors with me doing absolutely nothing wrong. So I've actually walked in the shoes that you're talking about, and I'm sure most other female contractors in this industry have. We haven't gained the respect yet that we need in the industry. Did I lose you?
I'm here, and it's just amazing that there's no difference that I'm seeing, hearing with situations like that happening on projects. I think it's called good faith dealings. I think that there's a two side to everything. I think that certain things that happen to contractors, especially women-owned contractors, are a lot different. Our experiences are different because I believe that, you know, the male counterparts trying to think that it's okay that they treat us in the manner. And, you know, as I was talking about this this particular common sense construction law, we talked about a covenant, implied covenant. It's on one of the projects that you're talking about, I'm very familiar with, you know, file name and complete names. What kind of project were you on where that happened? Because I like people telling their stories. What exactly happened on that particular project? Was the project located here in Georgia? Was the contractor located here in Georgia? What was going on?
Yes, ma'am. The contractor, it was a general contracting firm out of Atlanta, and I had been awarded it was a car dealership. It was a full structural demolition of three big buildings. One was a service building. One was a loan department, and the other one was the showroom for the dealership. And he sent me the contract telling me it was mine to lose. And I didn't really understand what all that was about, but I had never done business with this company before, and I didn't understand what that meant. So he sent me the contract, I signed it, sent it back, and I actually started working on the project. I was on the project for 8 days, and one of the brothers of the company came on to the job and told me it was my last day and that I needed to go ahead and get my equipment moved off the job site before 1 o'clock that afternoon. And then come to find out what had really happened was another demolition company had stepped in and made a under-the-table deal with the general contractor that I was dealing with. And the general contractor that I was dealing with came to me and told me that it was a golfing deal that happened underneath the table above his head and that he had no control of it. So I actually got my contract kind of ripped out from underneath me without even doing anything except for doing what I'm supposed to do, and I didn't have a leg to stand on as far as being able to defend my company or myself in that situation. And so I'm not sure how many other companies that general contracting firm in Atlanta does this way, but I'm sure I'm not the only one. is the biggest problem with our economy and everything in this world right now is our moral fibers are gone from the country. It's like you were saying, you had covenants back in the day. They didn't have to have something notarized and lien waivers and everything else just to believe somebody's word. And that's basically all it is now with these days and times the way they are, a handshake is not worth anything anymore. And everything has to be on paper. And if you miss dotting that one I, then you could lose a lot of money just for a paperwork error the way it is now.
Well, Tony, this is what I think. The contractor, I had a meeting with some people, actually a person today, and as we talked about it in the court would have honored whether or not there were some past experiences with that individual. So one of the things I want to share with everybody is when we looked at this particular project and you mobilized and you actually felt that, you know, after all the good talking, that you had this contract, you signed on the dotted line, because this was a private deal, did you inform the owner of this?
No. I was working strictly for the general contractor that had hired me for the job. He was the one going to pay me, so he was the one that I was actually working for at the time.
Yeah, but the company that owned the project, the facility, it was a facility that you worked for, did you directly inform the owners of the, because the GC represents the owner, and the owner's obligation.
Yes, I did later. We found out the person who was over this general contractor that actually had the project, and we went out to the job site and had a talk with the superintendent that was on the job site for that company, and we advised him of our situation, and he advised us that he would get to the bottom of it and he would make it right. And he contacted the general contracting firm that we're speaking of and told them that they needed to make it right with us or they weren't getting a check. So that company in Atlanta asked us to send an invoice for what we felt like they owed us, which we did. And the invoice amount was around $24,000. And when we got to the office to pick up the check, it was $2,000.
Wow.
And we called the guy back, and he said whatever they offered that we had to take it because it's like a court. It would be in court. So
okay.
We ended up having to accept $2,000 for the $24,000 that he actually owed us.
So what you're saying is that they used you to get the contract started. And when they got comfortable, those 8 days of working that you put in a lot of time, equipment, money, your own money. And when they got comfortable where they understood, because you actually was telling them all the things that you were going to share with them, you were sharing, and this is the word it's called intellectual property. You showed them exactly how to do demolition because they had no prior experience in doing a project of this size and nature, from my understanding, right?
Right. He asked me once we got on the job site, he wanted to get, and a lot of people do this, they want to get what we call our scope of work, how we're going to tackle this project, what we're going to do first, and how we're going to do it as a layout, which that's very common. You know, most people want to know, how are you going to do this? So we didn't think anything at the time. We just basically thought that we were explaining our situation, that we needed to get the bottom building torn down first, that we could take the retaining wall down and level the dirt as we go. So we were basically step by step telling them what we were going to do, not knowing that they were going to take the knowledge that we just provided for them, to have some labor-ready people in there doing what we were supposed to be doing.
So basically, they exploited you as a woman company.
Well, they asked me a lot of questions about the block on the retaining wall. They asked me, you know, how much is this block right here worth? What do you think this wall right here is worth? And at the time, I explained to them that it was so much per block, and that this was a 150-foot wall. So I was explaining to him, you know, when we were doing the demo, if you want me to palletize these blocks and shrink wrap them, then you can sell these blocks and not pay to dispose of
have
them
in the landfill.
Use them in the site work. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So I was trying to basically show him a way to save money in the project.
But then he also made money from the scrap that came out of the building too. That he
right.
didn't share the profits for that either. So he took advantage of the fact. That's what the word I'm gonna call it. He exploited you. It was like exploiting a little like you see on the internet, exploitation of an innocent situation. You were working in an innocent, good dealing, good faith conduct. In order to make him profit, make money, and everybody walk away all fine and dandy. But what he did was he took advantage of the fact that you gave him all that knowledge. So when he got
right.
you off the job, he was able to make more money by getting you off the job. And I think like you said earlier, I think this guy has a history of doing this throughout the whole throughout the industry. And this show is specifically set up to start whistleblowing and bringing to the attention of the authorities, and if those authorities don't want to take actions, then we know what to do next after that. Because I think it's more of a criminal matter than anything else. When people, back in the day, they call it theft of service, theft by deception. He deceived you,
right.
and he benefited from the work that you did. And he benefited it twice because he got paid twice on the project. I don't think the actual owner of this facility knew that, and it's a car dealership, they know that women buy more vehicles, and there's more of us than them. And if the owner knew, the owner of the dealership, the person that actually owned the dealership knew this was taking place, I think we would see a different outcome. I think when owners step up to the plate, and they make whoever their prime contractor work with integrity and responsibility to the people that they're serving once that dealership is built, then it's a big difference. You guys, I'm going to take just a quick second, and we're talking with Tony. Tony, what's your last name again?
McCurry.
Tony McCurry, who's been in business. I'm sorry?
McCurry, 7 years in business.
Mm-hmm. And the company has been doing quite a bit of work over the last 7 years, taking down large structures throughout the region. We're going to take a moment and play this little quick beat real quick, and I will be right back with you. Tony, I'm going to put you on hold for just a second.
Okay.
Next level, y'all. Getting it in for 2010 like it's never been.
With love, peace, and soul. I supposed to hold you? Get your love exposure, never to control you. I provide the kind of life that you supposed to. Do you ride or die? See the passion in your eye. Ain't too many candles that can hold up to your ball of fire smoke.
Baby,
this ain't an everyday love affair. Baby, let's take it there.
CWCC Digital Online Radio Show. We're talking about Conferences Construction Law. And some of it can be a little bit confusing from time to time, but common sense says that if I come out on a project and I do a project for you, or I do a service for you, then you should pay me. You can't drive up to McDonald's and ask for a Big Mac and not pay. That's why they tell you to pay first. Then you go to the next window. So maybe we should get into that in the construction industry, Tony. I want to welcome back Tony McClarity from CDI. We're located up in White County, Georgia, a nice county up in the mountains. And a lot of times, a lot of people don't think that the person that they actually do things to may not have a voice. But this woman is so connected that it's ridiculous. And I think it's by the grace of God that you've been fortunate to move through that situation down here in Atlanta, or imagine it was in Fulton County, I guess, and you were able to land several contracts right shortly after that. Am I correct?
Yes, ma'am.
So you actually do work for, you stated you did work for the malls and things. What kind of work do you do for the different malls and stuff?
Well, before the economy got really bad, we did commercial structural buildings. We did apartment complexes. We worked hurricane damage, which we still work hurricane damage and emergency storm cleanup. But now, since the economy is the way it is, the most demo that's happening in the industry now is retail demolition. These are demolitions that are happening inside the mall and in outlet malls where one store is going out and another store is coming in. So we go in and we get locked in at night, and we have to demo through the night due to shoppers during the day and with the noise that we have with our industry. So we get locked in at night. We work during the night. We clean up before time for the mall to open in the morning. And so we basically sleep days and work nights. And
Wow.
I'm very fortunate to be hooked in with about 7 general contractors that do the retail renovations. And between the 4 of them, most of the time this year I've stayed pretty busy.
And I'm glad, Tony. It makes it's a real blessing when you have decent general contractors out there, prime contractors who know and are obligated to performing with the type of integrity in which everyone has been doing. You have these four, I call them runaway horses out here performing, cheating people, lying, stealing, and doing whatever they have to do in order to make a buck, which I think is unorthodox, because if you have the same integrity like these other seven contractors that you work for, you don't ever have any problems. So, we talked about people working above board and being comfortable with working with a woman-owned firm. So this situation was something that was kind of new to you, too, as a woman-owned company, that you're working with seven general contractors now. They're treating you okay. What do you think this guy's problem was? These other seven contractors, they're scattered off throughout the country, right?
Well, I think that company in Atlanta.
I'm asking the seven general contractors. They're scattered throughout Georgia, or they're scattered throughout the country.
Most of these general contractors are up north. They're in Maryland, New York, and they're ones that I've never even got to shake hands with.
Okay.
It's pretty much been trust from the beginning. But I've also done my research on the companies that I deal with up north, and the ones that I do business with have really strong, long roots, and they've been doing this industry for a long time. And basically what they're trying to do is find them some good subs that they can hang on to and move from project to project and keep a good company name and keep their subs paid, so that way we're ready to move on to the next project with them. That's the type of people I'm dealing with. I think the company that was out of Atlanta, I think their biggest problem is greed. Because during that project, when I first took that project, he was gonna give our company all the valuables for getting in there and helping him out on such short notice. And then after we got in and he seen a dollar amount of the valuables, then he asked me to give him half of the valuables, which I agreed to do that because, I mean,
wow.
He helped me with the job. So I feel like I try to give back to my contractors because they're helping me, so why shouldn't I help them? But in the same time, you know, greed, that's just something that overwhelmed this guy, I think. He really seen the greed behind it because, like you said, he's used to small projects. And this one was one that when he got into it, it first scared him. And then after we got in there and he seen it coming down and he seen things happening, then he also seen dollar signs. And I think the other company that took the demolition contract from me actually came in at a whole lot cheaper than the amount that me and the general contractor had agreed upon. So I think he turned in my numbers to get that much for the demo, and he found a cheaper company to come in to actually do the demo. And he put the rest of that in his pocket, plus he put half the valuables in his pocket to leave. And there's no telling what else he got from that other company. So I think it was all greed with that company.
You know, that's a sad thing. And this company actually is doing federal work, more government work, and they have the same model. I've seen a pattern. I know the company really well. And I wanted to make sure that we started bringing on witnesses on the podcast so that we can send this out to the licensing board, the professional licensing board, to ensure that companies like this, not only are they debarred, but charges should be brought up against people like this that have continued to do this and walk without any kind of not a slap on the wrist. I'm a lot shocked that the prime that's over the project just was okay with it. But, you know, as I said before, I told everybody else before coming on that you're very, very connected. And I know that you got really busy. I think that was a blessing that you did get real busy right away shortly after that, because I know that based on the people that you know, it would be devastating for them to even know that this kind of happened to you. But I'm glad that that God smiles upon those who do the right thing. And you've always done the right thing. You hire local people in the community where you live at. You have great crews of individuals. You have a diversified crew of people. And you hire people that maybe needing a needing work that you didn't, possibly didn't know. So you really create economic development in your community. You're putting people to work. You're creating jobs, and you're creating jobs for a lot of people that would normally not be able to get hired. So I really want to commend you in what you do and how you've been able to sustain these last few years with the way the industry has swung. What is the way for people to get in contact with you? Do you have an email address that people can contact you and look you up?
Yes, ma'am. I have an email address, and I can give you my phone number as well.
Okay, go ahead.
The phone number is 678-414-6836.
Okay.
And the email address is the letter C as in Charlie, the letter D as in David, the letter S as in Sam, the letter E as in Edward, the letter R as in Robert, the letter V as in Victor, the letter I as in India, the letter N as in Nancy, the letter C as in Charlie, at gmail.com. So it's CDSERVINC at gmail.com. We are licensed, incorporated, and have workman's comp, general liability. We do commercial, residential, industrial, and retail.
You know, that is so important that you let people know that you do have all the credentials. Charlie, I want to thank you for coming on the show, guys. We got about 4 minutes left in the show. This will turn into a podcast, and I'll be sending this podcast out to some of your friends, and I'll just keep it really real with folks that kind of know our wonderful governor. I think it's an important thing to know that women have the power to be able to fight back, and you also have an opportunity to do things differently than anybody else, which is to just come forth. A lot of people just kind of push it on the table, but it's almost feeling, it's almost a feeling that you're helpless. But I'm glad that you don't feel that way, and I'm glad I don't feel that way. I want to thank you for coming in on the show. Guys, I want everybody to tune in on Saturday, where we'll have a special interest show. We'll have bringing on Gandhi L. I want to also welcome a news anchor, news reporter, Patricia Hutt, to the NCWCC Digital Online Broadcast Network. Tony, I really appreciate you coming on board and speaking with us. And we have a great deal of confidence in you, and we want to hope and wish you the best of luck with your company. And I promise you, I think all things are going to turn itself around for the good.
Well, I appreciate you having me on, and like I said, I'm glad we both got to get this off our chest about the general contractor and everything. But I'm like you. I believe that God's going to look out for us as long as we do the right thing and stand our ground. I think he's going to look out for us, and I think karma is going to take care of people like the general contractor that we've been discussing.
Absolutely. Thank you, Tony. And tell that husband of yours, I said, hey.
Okay. All right. Bye-bye. Mm-hmm.